Good afternoon and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture through the lens of USC, Southern California, and beyond. It's Thursday, October 22nd. From Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Itashi. On today's show, the final presidential debate happens tonight, the Pope said he supported same-sex civil unions, and USC students must figure out how to celebrate Halloween and football season safely. All that and more from Where We Are. But first, these news headlines.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Ayanna White. U.S. officials have accused Iran of sending threatening emails to U.S. voters. Iran and Russia obtained personal and voter data that could be used to sway opinions in the upcoming election. Hackers working for Tehran seem to be posing as right-wing groups, such as the Proud Boys, in trying to intimidate Americans into voting for President Trump. Purdue Pharma, the creator of painkiller OxyContin, will plead guilty to 3 federal criminal charges. The company has been accused of interfering with efforts to stop the growing opioid epidemic. Purdue Pharma will be dissolved and pay an over $8 billion settlement. Goldman Sachs agreed to pay about $3 billion to regulators around the world. This includes a record penalty for violating a U.S. anti-corruption law. With the deal, Goldman Sachs' parent company avoids a guilty plea in the United States. Citizens of Nigeria are protesting against police violence. SARS, or the Special Anti-Robbery Squad, is a police unit that has been accused of kidnapping, torturing, and murdering Nigerian citizens. As of today, remdesivir is the first FDA-approved coronavirus treatment. The antiviral drug has improved the recovery time of hospitalized COVID patients, including President Trump. I'm Ayanna White. Those are some of today's news headlines.
The election is only 12 days away, and tonight is the final presidential debate. With the critical rule modification in place, each candidate will have his final opportunity to address his opponent before the nation tonight in Nashville. Catherine Salisbury has more.
Tonight, President Donald Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden will face off in their second and final presidential debate. This follows the cancellation of the previous debate due to President Trump's positive case of COVID-19 and refusal to participate in a virtual meeting. The candidates will each have their microphones cut off while their opponent gives his initial response to each of the debate's segments. Topics selected for discussion by the debate's moderator, NBC's Kristen Welker, include race in America, fighting COVID-19, national security, leadership, American families, and climate change. The debate will take place at 6 p.m. Pacific time in Nashville, Tennessee. For Annenberg Media, I'm Catherine Salisbury.
While some voters may be swayed by tonight's event, 40 million Americans have already voted in this year's election, having made their decisions early. Pope Francis, leader of the Roman Catholic Church, in a bold move, endorsed civil union for same-sex couples. This goes against the official theology of the church and the views of many conservative Catholics and clergy. J-Ha Joshua Chang has more.
Pope Francis voiced his support for civil unions for same-sex couples in a documentary film released this week. The Catholic news agency reports that in the film Francesco, Pope Francis says, "Homosexual people have a right to be in a family. They are children of God and have a right to a family. Nobody should be thrown out or be made miserable over it." This does not mean the Catholic Church officially endorses same-sex civil unions. The Church still considers traditional marriage to be between one man and one woman. And Francis's many critics are reluctant to allow him to alter traditional church doctrine. Some are already calling for clarification. Francis says in the film, "What we have to create is a civil union law. That way, they are legally covered." Brittany Castillo is majoring in psychology, and she is the communications board chair at the USC Caruso Catholic Center. She says she could hardly be more pleased with what the Pope said, and she has many friends who agree.
We were all kind of happy. Like, we sent texts to each other all at the same time. And so everyone was just sending, like, "Did you hear, like, the news?" And then another person said, "Oh my gosh, I love the Pope so much right now." It's like, this is my pope.
Francis has voiced sympathy toward same-sex couples before. In 2013, Francis said, "If a person is gay and seeks out the Lord and is willing, who am I to judge that person?" Political science major Jackson Malinix says he is a practicing Catholic, and he is gay. He says Francis's statement reaffirms his belief that faithfulness and sexual orientation are not mutually exclusive.
Personally, my interpretation of Christian doctrine is that I was made in the image of God, and I do not think that my sexual desire is a mortal sin. So yes, I do think that the God I believe in would welcome me into a family.
But Malinix says that for the Catholic Church to embrace non-straight believers, there is still a long way to go.
It's obviously not the finish line. I think that there's still a lot of thinking that members of the church need to do about making sure everyone is included in the Christian family.
In the past, Pope Francis has consistently opposed same-sex marriage, and his latest remarks do not alter that view. He is known for off-the-cuff, sometimes controversial statements. And with his latest remarks about civil union, it remains to be seen if this might possibly lead to any change in the doctrine of the Catholic Church. For Annenberg Media, I'm Jeha Joshua Chang.
Since George Floyd's murder in May, there have been widespread protests against police violence internationally and in the U.S. The verdict over the death of Breonna Taylor reinvigorated protesters after none of the officers were charged with Taylor's death. Katie Clark spoke with Assistant Professor of Professional Practice Mickey Turner about how today's civil rights protests build on the great social justice movement of the 1960s.
I think the difference between now and then is that people back then had an end goal. They had a strategic plan. And I don't see that so much today, particularly because of what's happening in the midst of these protests with some of the violence and the looting and stuff, which is, you know, not part of the movement. I think that there just needs to be better strategies when it comes to these protests and, you know, in determining a way in which they're going to affect change. Because I feel funny saying this, but I don't think anything has changed that much since Black Lives Matter was, you know, incorporated. I thought we hit the low point with George Floyd, but now Toronto is looking better and better because there's just so much more, not much more of this, I should say, you know, I can take that anyone in my generation can take because we've lived through this before. And this level of regression is going to result in a whole plethora of mental health problems. I can guarantee you that.
Totally.
For everybody.
You know, this last 3 months of, there's so much Black Lives Matter coverage in the media, and, you know, it just has completely infiltrated Instagram for the better. But if that is not achieving complete justice, peaceful protests are not achieving complete justice. Where do you think our future lies?
There forever has been two different laws for people who look like me and for people who don't look like me. This is supposed to be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, I'm still waiting on that. You know, I've always known that history repeats itself, but I never thought we would go back here. I was, you know, born in a time when Jim Crow was in a shallow grave. It appears that he's up and dancing now. Again, we're not talking about segregation or seats in the bus or anything like that, but we're talking about laws that don't protect us.
If you were to give young people, young activists specifically, people who organized the protests, some advice,
here's the thing about protests that people tend to forget. America was founded on protests, on violent protests. You know, when you look at the Revolutionary War and when you look at when the people came over from England, you know, people act like this is like new, but Americans have been engaging in violent protests since time began. So I would say, take a beat, come up with a plan, come up with a strategy, understand how government works, understand how the political climate in this country is now working, and come up with ways to diffuse it. And, you know, we've even gone through a little bit of this at USC, you know, since all of this started with, you know, the George Floyd murder and then the outcry of the Black student population against, you know, the microaggressions and the macroaggressions and, you know, the discrimination that some of them have felt throughout their tenure at SC. So to them, I also say, come up with a plan, because yes, there is systemic racism in every American institution of higher learning. It is not unique to USC.
Halloween and football season are fast approaching. Eager to break the monotony of the virtual semester and blow off steam before finals week, students may feel more tempted than ever to celebrate in large social gatherings. Catherine Orihuela has more.
In her weekly briefing this morning, USC Chief Health Officer Sarah Van Orman said she's pleased that student COVID cases have been low over the last few weeks. But even with a 0% positivity rate heading into Halloween and the first Trojan football game, Van Orman says students need to stay on their guard.
We are concerned, as is our county, about going into the Halloween period with Halloween, with potentially our first game. There's going to be a normal want to get together socially. So we're really continuing asking students to be vigilant on that and to remember that those things are still not safe and not permitted. And it would be very easy for us to have a very significant uptick again.
Van Orman adds that any student found to be in violation of these restrictions could face serious disciplinary action.
We're continuing to share the information with students and off-campus property owners that, you know, gatherings, parties with people outside your household are not permitted.
She says that to safely transition back to some form of in-person instruction in the spring, as of now, students need to continue to exercise restraint. For Annenberg Media, I'm Catherine Orihuela.
And that's all for today's From Where We Are. Fiona Pastana is today's producer, and Ayanna White is today's executive producer. We had help from Emily Schurz, Katie Clark, Catherine Orihuela, Jehad Joshua Chang, and Catherine Salisbury. From all of us at Annenberg Media, I'm Sarah Atashi. We'll see you again next week.